ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife. News breakdown.
Well, the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, says the violence outside a Sydney church last night was completely unacceptable. At least two police officers were injured after large crowds clashed with authorities. This followed a stabbing during a live-streamed church service in Sydney's southwest. The mass was being live-streamed online when the bishop of an Assyrian Orthodox church was allegedly stabbed by a teenager. The Prime Minister was particularly disturbed by the ensuing actions of the crowd, who arrived in very large numbers following the news of the stabbing spreading on social media. The Prime Minister emphasising that police were there to protect the community.
The fact that the community or some people there turned on the police is completely unacceptable. Police were injured last night, including one police officer had his jaw broken.
Yes, that's because apparently he was hit by a flying brick on a fence paling. Heavens above. The stabbing is being investigated as a declared terrorist attack, and the Prime Minister has had to urge people to remain calm. Mike Burgess, the Director General of ASIO, says one incident like this doesn't prompt a change in Australia's national terrorism threat level, which will remain at possible, but he's taking matters seriously.
When we lowered the terrorism threat level to possible, I said at the time that possible does not mean negligible, and the most likely attack would be an individual that goes to violence with little or no warning with a knife, car or gun. And sadly, we've seen that in this case.
Well, Australia's eSafety Commissioner, Julie Inman Grant, has targeted social media companies who don't do enough, she says, to stop violent images and videos from spreading online in the wake of both devastating attacks in Sydney in recent days. She says she's had to legally compel Facebook and X, formerly known as Twitter, to remove violent content spreading on their platforms, and that she won't hesitate to use more legal powers if non-compliance continues.
I am not satisfied that enough is being done to protect Australians from the most extreme and gratuitous violent material circulating online. That is why I am exercising my powers under the Online Safety Act to formally compel them to remove it.
Yes, well, joining us again for the Nightlife News Breakdown tonight is Emily Barrett, Managing Editor of the Saturday Paper. Emily, good evening. Welcome to Nightlife.
Hi, Philip. How are you?
Very well. They're very challenging events over the past few days. I mean, it's a very fevered atmosphere in Sydney, in New South Wales at the moment because of the attacks, but pretty challenging events for the community, for first responders, for authorities, and calls for calm, isn't it, either? Do we have any idea as to why it's been declared a terrorist attack?
I don't know at this point. I mean, it's very difficult to say at this point exactly what the details are, and I think we really have to be very careful with any kind of comments around that, because obviously there could be a lot of circumstances. What we do know, obviously, is that, a lot of people have seen what transpired in the church, and it has led to its own sort of momentum since. Which is one of the problems with, as we talk about sort of platforms that live stream content, you are always at risk of something happening that can end up leading to greater ramifications such as this. It's absolutely tragic. I think that the Bishop Murray Emmanuel has a lot of followers on social media. And so that's what led to the large groupings outside the church and those terrible scenes that we saw. So it's hard to say at this point, and I think it's probably best that we leave it to the police to make.
Oh no, of course, exactly. I think people are just puzzled and wondering, why this declaration was made. It's not been made entirely clear as to why it is, other than some disgruntled member of the community, for example. That's all. Look, I mean, Mr. Albanese's, issuing national calls for calm and so on in a generally peace-loving country like ours. It's not often that prime ministers have to do that, is it?
No, that's right. And it does sort of display exactly the kinds of political sensitivities that are surrounding a lot of what we're seeing at the moment. I mean, obviously we've got some really strong feelings and strong sentiments and great outcry being heard around Gaza and Palestinian question and Israel. There are a lot of heightened tensions here, and the government knows that there are a lot of different communities that are in great pain right now. And so it's telling that Albanese has been so quick to come out and call for calm and describe, you know, this peace-loving nation. It's really an appeal that we, as you say, don't hear very often, but it does speak to the gravity of the situation.
Yeah, I mean, in this particular instance at the Assyrian Church, you can almost not blame social media, but, well, you sort of can, can't you, in a way? Because, I mean, the event was live streamed, but, of course, news of the attack spread rapidly on social media, and the next thing you know, there's a complete, you know, to-do outside the church, and people are injured, police are injured, a lot of police vehicles are injured. I mean, it's a mess. I mean, people wring their hands about this, but there's no real answer to it, is there?
No, well, that's, and the thing is, hand-wringing's all very, I mean, at least people are concerned about it, and perhaps this can give some kind of extra metal to what the government is trying to do right now in bringing the platforms to some kind of accountability over misinformation and disinformation and even their attachment to news. You know, there's the misinformation angle is actually one of the more, I suppose one of the more tackleable sorts of angles to this, because, you know, it's interesting that there were, or as far as we know, there weren't e-safety notices given in relation to the Westfield stabbings. And those images continue to circulate. They're pretty confronting. I mean, and within minutes, X and Facebook had anti-Islamic, anti-Semitic and anti-immigrant content, which some of which was falsely identifying the perpetrator. And that misinformation, you know, that was picked up and reported by a news outlet, which then led the family of that person to complain and forced the police to release the correct name. So there's, and by that stage, 70,000 posts apparently had been seen linking the wrong person to that attack. So, you know, this is just goes to show the importance of getting the platforms to sort of come to heel a little bit over their use of,
but they won't. They won't, will they? Because there aren't humans there. They're just robots. And
no, well, that's right. And it's the government really is in a tricky situation here of how they're supposed to go about this. Obviously, a lot of this is going to be led from the states with its you know, congressional hearings that have tried to bring. But you know, there's also the issue that a lot of people like using X and Facebook for their own political messaging as far as they're able to. So it's you know, it serves different masters.
Yes, just on to the aftermath of the Bruce Lehrman defamation case, which he lost. The judge found, federal court judge Michael Lee found that Bruce Lehrman had, on the balance of probabilities, raped Brittany Higgins at Parliament House in 2019. It's led to a lot of commentary, and also it's also led to some rethinking about whether there should be another possible criminal trial. The ACT Attorney General says, well, it's up to the Director of Public Prosecutions to decide whether or not to pursue a second criminal trial of Bruce Lehrman. His original trial, of course, made no findings after it was abandoned due to juror misconduct. Shane Rattenbury in the ACT government says the possibility of a second prosecution does technically remain open.
Well, the DPP will obviously make their own decisions on these matters. The government does not direct the DPP. The DPP will need to make those decisions based on the information that's available to them and consistent with their prosecution guidelines.
You wouldn't think it's likely, would you, Emily?
Oh, to see a criminal trial come from
yes.
this?
Yes.
Well, look, I mean, this is, I think, honestly, when Lee described this, when Justice Lee described this as an omni-shambles, that's probably the best summing up you can possibly make. And the idea that there might be more trials spiralling out of this. The thing is, I mean, there would be, I think everybody at this point feels a need to see some kind of well, closure, you hesitate to say, but you know, somebody has to be brought to account for what's been going on. It's, you know, it's almost as if yesterday when that announcement came down, we finally had an adult in the room after, you know, just weeks of ugly stories. You know, there's locker rooms of tabloid journalism, basically. And you know, Lisa Wilkinson's truth defence, that was a risky strategy and it paid off to an extent. We can all hope that, you know, when she said this moment should give strength to women who have experienced assault, you'd hope that that's the case. But it's hard to be optimistic. I mean, who would want to go through what's transpired over the past four years? What woman would want to go through that again?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And if you look at the amount of people in the vicinity of this story that have been affected in all kinds of egregious ways, it's defamation cases is only part of it. There's the mental health and careers destroyed, and you know, no one's come out of this well. And you know, Lisa Wilkinson also hasn't. You know, her reporting was also criticised by Justice Lee.
Mm.
So, you know, we'll buckle up for the next events.
Well, there may be more because, after all, there is still, of course, a case on foot in WA, a defamation case. It's the one launched by Linda Reynolds against Brittany Higgins. Now, you might, based on Justice Michael Lee's comments about elements of that case, that there were allegations have been made up that there were there was a cover up by members of the government, and Justice Lee did address himself to those issues, which are issues presumably in this defamation trial in WA, and Justice Lee was not he's pretty sceptical as to whether those cover up claims could be made out. Opposition leader Peter Dutton seized on this when he was commenting on the findings of the Lehrman matter.
Linda Reynolds has absolutely been vindicated. She's a first-class individual, a person of great honour and integrity. Her reputation has been besmirched, and she's right to pursue the matter in the way that she is.
I wonder where this leaves the Linda Reynolds defamation case in WA. Does it mean Brittany Higgins is in a more awkward position, do you think, Emily?
Yeah, look, it's hard to say. I mean, it's understandable. I mean, first of all, let me just say, I think it's sort of wild that the main takeaway from all of this is that Linda Reynolds deserves an apology. It's not necessarily the most pertinent thing to focus on.
True, but there are so many spikes in this ball.
I hear you. I think, you know, I mean, one takeaway might be that an event as destructive as a rape allegation needs to be handled sensitively and compassionately and competently. Mm. But no, it's true that there are more legs to this potentially because, you know, Reynolds did object to the government's payout in December of 2022, the confidential payout to settle the civil claim that Higgins had against the Commonwealth. And that, you know, that was millions of dollars. We don't know exactly how much, but...
I think we do, 2.44, I think the judge said.
2.44, yeah. There you go. Yeah. Sorry, maybe it just slipped my mind. And Dutton, Peter Dutton's obviously said that the matter, I think he was supporting it being addressed to the National Anti-Corruption Commission. She feels that her response to Higgins' allegations of not having supported her enough weren't heard. She had no time to do that. But, you know, if we look at the litany of defamation cases here, you know, first of all, Reynolds herself has paid damages to Higgins for calling her a lying cow. Then last month, Reynolds got a formal apology and a $90,000 settlement from Shane Drumcold over defamatory comments that he apparently made as the DPP. Mm. She's now got these two concurrent defamation claims against Higgins and Shiraz in the West Australian Supreme Court. And it does seem like there's likely to be a trial at the end of July as far as her lawyers are concerned. So yes, it seems like there's certainly more to go for Higgins. Mm. There's certainly more to find out here. But
yep, there is indeed. Look, can we move on to onto big policy issues? Now, you take a broad view on politics, of course, as your role as managing editor of the Saturday paper. We haven't spoken since Mr. Albanese, the Prime Minister, launched the government's Future Made in Australia policy with his speech last week, saying it aims to seize the opportunities of the next decade for our nation to generate the energy and skills and jobs and technology and investment that will power our future prosperity. Pardon my slightly inflated presentation of his words. How do we view this idea that we're suddenly going to be making things in Australia again, despite all the previous evidence that we never have been able to make a lot of things? We can make things. We can make some things here, but a lot of things we think we ought to be making, we don't succeed in doing.
We have stopped, yes. I think, I mean, there's a lot to be said about this. It's a fascinating time, really, to be looking at where we are in the globalisation cycle that has started to reverse into protectionism, right? But clearly the government wants to make this a centrepiece of a re-election strategy. And, you know, the speech was made in Queensland when Albanese outlined his thinking around this, and that state will be a key battleground for Labor in the election. And since the US launched its Inflation Reduction Act, which is basically its plan to shift the country to renewables, the pressure's definitely been on for Australia to find ways to invest in its own transition. The danger really for the government here is it doesn't want to be losing money and jobs and brain power to bigger and better strategies that are overseas. And we have the resources and the critical minerals and the climate to make this work, but we're used to shipping everything offshore. So it's a matter of making more domestic industrial capacity to refine and to manufacture, and the government's well aware of that.
I mean, the question seems to me, though, is are we going back into a new era of protectionism where we are simply going to protect Australian industries? Because even the making of solar panels, for example, most of the feed materials for these solar panels aren't made here. They're made overseas. They might be assembled here and so on. But these issues are eternal. They've always been with us here in Australia, and we've never really managed to. I mean, we can make a lot of things here. We make a lot of high-tech things here. We're very good at mining technology and so on. But a lot of what many people consider to be manufacturing, appliances, electronics, motor cars, things ordinary people use, we have not been successful because the cheapest manufacturing has been exported to China. And that hasn't changed, has it?
Well, I mean, labour has got more expensive in China as there's been middle-class growth in China, and there has been a focus by the Chinese government certainly to sort of move its way up the production chain. So as things have got more expensive to produce in China and throughout parts of Asia, Australia has potentially got the ability to try and compete more, although it certainly can't compete with the cheapest producers. The thing here really is, what choice have you got in a situation where this country needs to make a major transition over the next few years, and they have to compete? They can't compete, Australia can't compete dollar for dollar with the US or dollar for euro, but a comprehensive national strategy can help this country to compete, to attract investment. That's really the only choice that there is. So, they've got all of these different strategies that they're trying to knit together under this idea of a future made in Australia. And what's already been announced, we have $15 billion for the National Reconstruction Fund. We've got Hydrogen Head Start and the Solar Sunshot, all, billion-dollar programs that they need to find a comprehensive framework for. And obviously, Jim Chalmers has started to lay the groundwork for this. There'll probably be more funds, there'll be more funds earmarked in the budget in May. And I think their strategy, as far as the way that Chalmers has laid it out, is to partner more with industry in a way that is not about just giving subsidies or just giving handouts or trying to pick winners and losers, as they, that kind of strategy is usually accused of doing, right? They want to make that a constructive partnership where there are, I guess, benefits being extracted for taxpayers. And so they'll want that to be, it's not all going to be about tax breaks. Really these sorts of partnerships involve some, smart contract design, creation of genuine joint ventures where industry is actually giving enough into it and getting enough out of it for it to be attractive, and yet the taxpayer isn't getting ripped off. So it's a really delicate balance. Clearly they have a plan that they're putting together, and we can hope for some constructive conversation around it, hopefully.
Yes. Pardon my world weariness about the matter, but anyway.
Exactly right.
All right, Emily, it's been terrific to talk, as always. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.